toes of his socks. All the regrets and guilts and longings of her life came over her. No, she thought, I won't go. But she was already gone, and in a moment she was elsewhere, scattered nothingness. The nurse found them half an hour later. She stood quietly, taking in the sight of the tall, youngish man curled around the slight, dead, middle-aged woman. Then she went to fetch the orderlies. Outside, London was waking up. Robert lay with his eyes closed, listening to the traffic on the high street, footsteps in the corridor. He knew that soon he would have to open his eyes, let go of Elspeth's body, sit up, stand up, talk. Soon there would be the future, without Elspeth. He kept his eyes shut, breathed in her fading scent, and waited. Last letter. The letters arrived every 2 weeks. They did not come to the house. Every second Thursday, Edwina Noblin Poole drove 6 miles to the Highland Park post office, 2 towns away from her home in Lake Forest. She had a P.O. box there, a small one. There was never more than one letter in it. Usually, she took the letter to Starbucks and read it while drinking a venti decaf soy latte. She sat in a corner with her back to the wall. Sometimes, if she was in a hurry, Edie read the letter in her car. After she read it, she drove to the parking lot behind the hot dog stand on 2nd Street, parked next to the dumpster, and set the letter on fire. "Why do you have a cigarette lighter in your glove compartment?" her husband, Jack, asked her. "I'm bored with knitting. I've taken up arson," Edie had replied. He let it drop. Jack knew this much about the letters because he paid a detective to follow his wife. The detective had reported no meetings, phone calls, or email, no suspicious activity at all, except the letters. The detective did not report that Edie had taken to staring at him as she burned the letters, then grinding the ashes into the pavement with her shoe. Once she'd given him the Nazi salute, he had begun to dread following her. There was something about Edwina Poole that disturbed the detective. She was not like his other subjects. Jack had emphasized that he was not gathering evidence for a divorce. "I just want to know what she does," he said. "Something is different." Edie usually ignored the detective. She said nothing to Jack. She put up with it, knowing that the overweight, shiny-faced man had no way of finding her out. The last letter arrived at the beginning of December. Edie retrieved it from the post office and drove to the beach in Lake Forest. She parked in the spot farthest from the road. It was a windy, bitterly cold day. There was no snow on the sand. Lake Michigan was brown. Little waves lapped the edges of the rocks. All the rocks had been carefully arranged to prevent erosion. The beach resembled a stage set. The parking lot was deserted except for Edie's Honda Accord. She kept the motor running. The detective hung back, then sighed and pulled into a spot at the opposite end of the parking lot. Edie glanced at him. "Must I have an audience for this?" She sat looking at the lake for a while. "I could burn it without reading it." She thought about what her life might have been like if she'd stayed in London. She could have let Jack go back to America without her. An intense longing for her twin overcame her, and she took the envelope out of her purse, slid her finger under the flap, and unfolded the letter. "Dearest E, I told you I would let you know, so here it is. Goodbye. I try to imagine what it would feel like if it was you, but it's impossible to conjure the world without you, even though we've been apart so long. I didn't leave you anything. You got to live my life. That's enough. Instead, I'm experimenting. I've left the whole lot to the twins. I hope they'll enjoy it. Don't worry. It'll be okay. Say goodbye to Jack for me. Love, despite everything. E." Edie sat with her head lowered, waiting for tears. None came, and she was grateful. She didn't want to cry in front of the detective.